Welcome back to the Guardian with Joy and Holly Radio Show. Moments away, Rebecca Louie. But first,
so during the dry summer months, you'll notice more aggressive yellow jackets flying around. Yellow jackets are looking for your barbecue meat, sweet drinks, as well as water sources. You want to keep them at bay with rescue yellow jacket traps. Rescue yellow jacket traps are an eco-friendly do-it-yourself option to keep these stinging pets away from you. The traps use a powerful lure for yellow jackets, and they will not attract beneficial honeybees. All rescue products are made in the USA. You can go to rescue.com where you can find where to buy rescue products and other things. That's rescue.com.
Holly, let's go to the hotline and bring in our guest for this week.
Rebecca Louie is the compostess. She's a New York master composter, beekeeper, avid gardener, and also the author of Compost City Practical Composting Know-How for Small Space Living. Welcome to the program, Rebecca.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we thank you for taking time out of your day, not only to educate Holly and myself, but all of our listeners across the country. We thank you for that.
I'm excited to chat compost, that's for sure.
So let's start with this. What is a master composter, and how did you go about getting that certification? Because we know about master canners and master gardeners, but this is a new term for probably many of us.
Yeah, I think those are actually perfect examples. Basically, you know, like many townships and municipalities that have programs like Master Gardening, there are many across the country that do master composting as well. And essentially, a master composter is someone who really digs deep, if you will, into what happens in the soil ecosystem and how you can basically transform any organic waste into compost to help nurture the land. So depending on where you live, the program can range anywhere from a few weeks to a few months. Sometimes there might be, you know, related costs or community service components to this. But essentially, it's a way for people who are truly invested in recycling organic wastes, feeding the land, nurturing the soil, to kind of really get down and dirty into the deep, nerdy, wonderful aspects of composting.
Now, we're talking about the traditional heat the compost pile up, stir it, and break it down, or are we actually, or are we talking about vermicomposting tied in with this?
Yeah, so ideally, the best master composter certification programs cover everything. Okay. So, you know, there's trenching underground, there's setting up a range of outdoor bins that can either be enclosed or exposed to air or lined with hardware cloth to keep out pests. Then there's some of these methodologies that are maybe considered indoor activities like vermicomposting or bokashi fermentation. And so basically, it's a really full, exciting curriculum of all the different ways and all of the different scales that you can compost at. So if an individual is interested in doing one banana peel a day or a week, great. You've started, you're doing the work, amazing. If you're looking to like feed the soil of a full community garden or even something larger, you know, school programs, etc., there are solutions and strategies to get there as well.
Okay, that's really great information. Now, you weren't always, you know, all about being so in touch with nature or green living. What changed that, and how did you become more into gardening, composting, the whole green living lifestyle?
That's a great question, and just to preface it, if I can go through this transformation, I'm pretty sure anyone on this planet can as well. But yeah, I grew up in New York City, and there, you know, even though I did have a backyard where I grew up, it was mostly like the patio. It was like the concrete place to go and have a barbecue. Like, I didn't really have a connection to nature or the trees around me. And so it really took well into my 20s and early 30s after a career as like an entertainment and lifestyle reporter, kind of the opposite of sustainability, kind of, you know, over the top red carpet versus green living, to kind of make the leap. And really the thing that transformed my perspective on the world was starting to cook more. And it's something that we all do. Hopefully everyone, you know, gets in the kitchen every now and then, loves eating. And, you know, as I started cooking more at home, I started to think like, oh man, yes, I'm creating a great meal, but what about all this other stuff that's a result of what I've cooked? And it was a lot. You know, like any kind of dish, like the fruit peels, the vegetable ends. And so I was like, what can I do with this? How can I make it useful? So, you know, like most people, I turned to the internet And I read all these things and I was like, okay, I could do this. And I actually started with worms, speaking of worms, and I failed miserably because I think I got very overzealous. And I don't know, we can talk about all sorts of ways to do worms a little bit better. But, you know, the lesson for me was like, okay, I didn't do this right. I'm still interested in doing it. So how can I? And that's actually what led me to the Master of Composting certification, which then was way more fun than I could have imagined it would have been. And it's kind of changed my life, getting me to where I am today.
Well, let's talk about worm composting. Holly and I have talked about that on the program before, vermicomposting on the show. Can you offer us some tips on why people should consider doing it, what you did wrong and what you're doing right? And also the question that comes up, does it smell when you vermicompost indoors?
Yeah, so maybe I'll start with that last question first, which is across any composting system, if you are doing it right, which just takes a little bit of like information on the front end of things, there are ways to prevent odor. Perfectly easy to do. And so does vermicomposting smell? Nope, not bad, at least. If you're doing it right, you open up that worm bin and it's like, you know, walking in the Amazon jungle, like this beautiful, rich soil, beautiful scent that like wafts all over you, if you are doing it right. And so the doing it right is the challenge, okay? So the interesting thing about worms and why people might be interested in doing it is that it's convenient. You can do it indoors. So it's not like you're, you know, outside with a pitchfork and like sweaty in the sun. It can be kind of discreet, meaning if it is indoors in your apartment or in your house, you know, a lot of people do a DIY version of a worm bin that's just in something like a, you know, a storage tote drilled with holes. And that could go in a closet, can go under the bed, which I know a lot of people love the idea of worms under the bed. But it's neat and discreet. Plus, I will say that if you are either a curious person or your roommates are curious or you have kids, they are kind of like pets. You know, unlike a lot of composting, which is very microbial and a little bit abstract, you know, in terms of who's doing the work, like a vermicompost bin will have something like 1,000 worms in it to start. And you see them and you can be kind of affectionate towards them, and that can be really fun in terms of like learning and engaging and kind of committing to doing it well. However, I will say in my case, and I would guess like in the case of many people, that can sometimes be a newbie's downfall. Because you know how when you have something new and cute and exciting and you just kind of want to feed it, you get very excited about feeding. You know, the worst thing you can do to a worm bin is overfeed it, because it is a little universe. And, you know, like any living creatures, they are only going to eat what they're going to eat. And if they're not catching up to the amount that you're giving them, what's left over will just start to do its thing and decompose. And that's where you start to run into odor issues. That's where you can create a bin that's kind of acidic and actually very detrimental to the worms, and actually invite other they are guests, but pests, depending on your perspective. And so my biggest tip that I have for any new wormer is portion control. And I tend to, with my worms, get a small container, maybe like a pint size, like, you know, takeout soup thing, or like a yogurt container, fill it up with food scraps and think of that as like a portion. And a secondary tip is you can freeze those scraps first and then thaw them out. And that does two things. One, it kills any pest eggs on the surface. So if, you know, maybe the bananas were, you know, at a display outside the grocery and maybe a fly landed on it and then laid eggs or something. So they'll be frozen. Plus, in the thawing process, a lot of liquid will leach out. And so you can drain that liquid before you put it in the worm bin because, you know, again, we want them to be comfortable. And so with that portion, you feed it and you resist all temptations to give them any more food until you see that portion go away, or almost go away. And then you know they're ready for the next one. And that's kind of the biggest success tip. I mean, I absolutely overfed my first worm bin because I had read statistics about how quickly they consume things online, but that's like always in the ideal. And I think we all know that we rarely live up to our potential in terms of how ideal we're living our lifestyles. So that also applies to worms as well. So do your best to just make sure they have what they need and nothing more.
Gotcha. So we are talking with Rebecca Louie. She's a master composter, author, beekeeper, and more. So let's talk about beekeeping. What are some things people should keep in mind or learn about before they dive into that?
Yes. So I started beekeeping, again, with these, like, sort of grand ambitions and these, like, peaceful ideas of, like, that will be so serene. How interesting. Interesting, yes, but maybe not as serene as I thought. And there are a couple of things that people should know going into the art of honey beekeeping. One, you need a pretty hefty amount of knowledge on the front end going into it, right? Like, you need to realize, A, that it's a seasonal endeavor. So depending on where you live, there's a very specific time of year that you need to start, because that will give the bees and the population time to grow over the seasons, collect enough honey that they need, or nectar to turn into honey that they need for the winter, et cetera. But, you know, there's also a financial investment in it as well, because there is a lot of gear involved in beekeeping. So those are two things that I think people should be aware of going into it. And then the fact that there is ongoing maintenance. It's not like you just set up a honeybee hive and you're like, great, we did it. Let's go, girls. And I say girls because the hive is like 90% female. But first of all, there are the regular checks that happen every couple of weeks, full inspections of the entire hive just to make sure everything is going on as it should be in there. Then there are sort of seasonal things that you do, you know, checking for varroa mites, you know, adding boxes as the population is growing. So this ongoing work is something that sometimes falls by the wayside for a new beekeeper, because they don't necessarily realize the commitment that's involved in really kind of going the long haul with your bees. And I guess lastly, there are things like environmental considerations. Depending on where you live, if, for example, they're bare in the region, you might need to create some sort of electric fence or other types of protections like ratchet straps, et cetera, for your hives. Certain municipalities require that you register your hives. And then there's like the good neighbor policy where, you know, depending on how population dense your area is, there may be considerations around whether or not it's appropriate to have hives in certain areas, or there may be like actual logistic things you need to get like approved and some such depending on where you are. So that's the big picture, but I will say there is an option that I don't think people realize, which is to nurture native bees. There are 4,000 native bee species in North America. And if you want to kind of cut some of the, you know, infrastructure and kind of commitment and maintenance out of the way, you know, there are these native bee homes or hotels that you can set up in your yard and nurture the populations for these native bees that actually live very solitary lifestyles. So it's like one per hole and then it's eggs versus like a colony of 50,000 at the height of summer. Now, so that's something I like to share.
With beekeeping, would you suggest it's kind of like canning or going for mushrooms? You follow somebody and learn and shadow somebody for a while until you understand the procedure of what you need to do and how to do it before you go out and venture on your own and invest in beekeeping on yourself?
Yeah, I love that as a suggestion. That's such a good one because not only do you get the hands-on education with someone who's experienced, but frankly, you start to understand your own relationship to bees. Because when you open up that box, and let's say it's the height of honey season and they're trying to like protect their honey and they're flying into your face, you know, depending on who you are, you may not actually be comfortable or able to relax in the way you need to in that kind of situation to get through a hive. So the more exposure you have on the front end, like, you know, with a mentor or as an apprentice somewhere, you're absolutely right. That's a great suggestion. If people have that opportunity, I say go for it and really like dip your toes in the real experience.
Now, as a master composter, do you have a preference of cold composting or hot composting or vermicomposting? What is your go-to method?
Yeah, well, I would say that I like it easy.
Right.
You know, it's, I have like a bazillion setups just because I'm a bit nerdy about it, but I also do not need to spend too much time on any of them because life is hectic enough. So personally, you know, if hot composting happens kind of organically because let's say I've mowed the whole lawn and I've made a giant pile of grass clippings and it's hot and they're wet and like nature does its thing and magically makes it hot, great. But am I going to kind of pursue the active work of hot composting, which actually there's a bit of a science to, like there's certain ratios of like dry items and wet items that you put in, you turn it on a certain schedule. Like, that's great if you are working at a certain scale or you have ambition to like achieve a certain amount of compost. But for me, like, if I could just sit back and kind of move items around and leave them there for nature to do the rest of the work, that is A-okay with me.
Right. Before we ask about your book, I know people are wanting me to ask this question, who are curious about vermicomposting. Do you have to worry about overpopulation in a worm bin?
That's a good question. I have two answers to that.
Okay.
The quickest answer is, the population will only grow to the amount of space that you provide it, because there is a little bit of, you know, reality of like the space itself does not hold beyond like the population mm-hmm. itself. However, that will be like in a standard bin. That's more of like a single chamber.
Okay.
However, there are things like stacked flow through worm bins, where basically the idea is you keep adding layers, sort of like floors on an apartment building. And you add those layers as they sort of eat everything in layer one, then you add another floor, then they start migrating up to, you know, the second floor, then third floor, fourth floor, et cetera. And actually those types of systems are much more forgiving, or I should say they invite population growth, because the herd is constantly moving. Mm. So overpopulation is a good thing if it happens, or if you find that it's getting densely populated, because then, you know what, split them, make right. another bin, give them to a friend. But I don't think people have to worry about like the worms, you know, emerging and taking over their house, because there's too many of them.
Thank you. So you have your book, which is the Compost City Practical Composting Know-How for Small Space Living. What is something you can tell us about your book, or give us an overall about it, and then reasons, maybe unique reason or a good tip in there that encourages our listeners to check it out?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for mentioning it. And I will say that I think my approach to composting, I hope, is trying to hit everybody where they're at. And that's kind of my main takeaway from the book, which has a ton of science, a ton of methodology, hopefully a lot of funny-ish jokes and like some cute illustrations. You know, it's a pretty user-friendly book. But really the message is that anyone can find an entry point into composting that fits their schedule, that fits their lifestyle, and that fits, you know, their kind of interest level, frankly. And so, you know, while it's called Compost City, it really is for any kind of person who I like to call like the eco-curious, that kind of wants to dip their toe in and get started, and then maybe kind of grow with the practice if they find that it's, you know, working for them in their lives. So in terms of a tip, you know, a lot of people have, I get it, like fear or worry about, you know, compost either being stinky or attracting pests. And, you know, what I talk a lot about in the book are really, really simple, easy solutions that prevent that from happening. And it's like, if you know those things going into whatever system you choose, it's really practical maintenance, and it will set you up for success later, so you don't have the kind of like heartbreaking experience where things go wrong, or, you know, suddenly you're in a funk that you did not really think you wanted in your personal spaces. So yeah, basically it's for anyone. Anyone can do it, and there are plenty of ways to start and be successful quite easily.
Well, Rebecca, we greatly appreciate the time you've offered Holly and myself and our listeners. How can people find more about you, and how can they get their hands on your book?
Yeah, well, I'm on social media. I particularly enjoy being on Instagram, so you can follow me at The Compostess on Instagram. The book is available wherever fine reading is available, but, you know, your local bookstores or on websites, etc. So it's hopefully easy to find, and, of course, is in circulating in a lot of library systems as well. So, you know, if you're not looking to purchase the book, that is something that you could either request your library to order if it's not there, you know, or find like other pathways for sharing, or like communal sharing, like at your local, you know, botanical gardens or gardening groups, et cetera, because sometimes those organizations will have libraries as well.
Well, Rebecca, we greatly appreciate the time you offered us, and we've learned some things in this little shorter time that we've had. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you. This was great fun. Happy composting.
For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.